The following Dharma talk was given by Danika Shoang Ankele Osho at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shoang Osho is a Dharma holder and priest in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered freely. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everybody. And good morning, everyone joining from home. My fellow passengers in this human journey. All of us who have taken birth at this time in human form. Does that sound cosmic? I hope so, because it's actually a very cosmic situation that we're in. Here in the heart of the burning world, in this hall of both heartbreak and wholeness. Sometimes I think the main question of practice is how deeply can we let both those truths touch us? Can we trust that through our broken and breaking hearts, we'll find wholeness? I've heard Hojin Sensei say, when the heart breaks, let it break wide open. So just taking a moment to touch in with the aching place, the ordinary suffering of sickness and old age and death, and then all that we create, abuse and hatred, division, violence, killing, so much killing. It's heavy. And then there's the wholeness. Gathered together this morning to study and practice teachings on the true way of peace. This incredible autumn morning, the sky completely blue. The mountain colors in their like most glorious splendor. Both things. I think sometimes that, is the sound okay? It feels like there's a weird echo. It's okay? It's just me? Okay, sorry. I'll just put that out of my mind now that, We come, I think most of us enter into practice or seek out a path because of the heartbreak and the heartache. And then maybe we stay with it. We keep coming back, so to say, because of the wholeness, the healing, sensing that, a possibility for that. Maybe it's just an intuition in the beginning. I remember in the very start of my practice, sitting in this Dharma hall, and Daito Roshi would be giving a talk on a koan, and I wouldn't understand a word he was saying. It was like another language, but he would say, there'd be one or two things. He'd say, you are a Buddha. And I knew that that was true. And then practicing, we see like, oh, It's true. I'm clarifying. I'm seeing. It's true. More and more it becomes our own experience. So I wanted to this morning look at a few ways that we can be so deeply nourished, I think, and healed, and contribute that nourishment and healing to the world through practice, okay? The nourishment of vow, the nourishment of presence, and the nourishment of contact with the cosmic mystery. We're going to begin with vow. It's such a potent starting place. You know, vow is so woven into Zen. And the Bodhisattva vows, in particular, I wanted to reflect on, although we have students take Chukai and vow to uphold the precepts, the 16 Bodhisattva precepts, and monastics take monastic vows. But all of us, even if it's your first time here this morning, we'll be chanting the Bodhisattva vows together. And the Bodhisattva is the being who makes a vow to help everybody else become liberated, and also themselves. And these things really happen at the same time. But for the Bodhisattva to truly fulfill their vow is that before they are enlightened or liberated, they're going to bring all the other beings to that deep peace and freedom. Can you believe we take that vow every day? That is such an intense vow. But if you take it less of like a literal, like, oh my God, like that's a lot of beings to save, and more as like, okay, well, a vow is kind of how I'm going to direct myself. Okamura Roshi says, we understand that living by vow is not to accept a particular fixed doctrine, but is a natural expression of our life force. So in this cosmic dance, in this human form, you have this energy. You have this potentiality. And vow is like, okay, whether I like it or not, this is the situation. And so given this, here's how I'm going to use it. And, you know, a worldly view might imagine that in order to create the world we want to live in, we've got to really get in there and exert some control, manage some outcomes, make some things happen the way we think they should happen. This is not the Bodhisattva's vow. The Bodhisattva vow is coming from within the deep truth of reality, the deep truth of cause and effect, the deep truth of karma, the deep truth that when we bring goodness into the world, goodness is the result, whether we can see it or not. The four Bodhisattva vows are arising from the four noble truths, right? The four noble truths that life is suffering, that the cause of suffering is desire or clinging, that it's possible to put an end to suffering, and that there's a way to do this. They're so like the Four Noble Truths are so like grounded. And Shihaku Okamura, in his book, Living by Vow, he says that these bodhisattva vows that we take, right? Sentient beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Desires are inexhaustible, I vow to put an end to them. The dharmas are boundless, I vow to master them. The Buddha way is unattainable, I vow to attain it. That these are kind of an evolved version of the bodhisattvas, the enlightened bodhisattvas' original vows, which were, I vow to enable people to be released from the truth of suffering. I vow to enable people to understand the origin of that suffering. I vow to enable people to peacefully settle down in the truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. I vow to enable people to attain nirvana. Coming from within the deep insight of the bodhisattva, they are using their wisdom, dharma, to teach living beings, to guide them. And as practitioners on the path, still clarifying ourselves, the bodhisattva vows, as we chant them, are also practice vows for us. So I think of, vow and commitment are so of the same cloth. And in a sense, living in the burning world, our vows are our commitment for how we're going to show up. And because there is no playbook for what those vows look like, there's no script, right? We're finding our way. We have to take them up, and that takes, all the paramitas, right? Generosity and patience and joyful effort, discipline, perseverance, concentration, wisdom. So the vows, the precepts, they give us like a frame. It's so nourishing. So when we meet the like burning, suffering world and we just feel like, oh my God, I can't take it, stop, we should reconnect. Like, wait, actually, I can. I know how I want to meet this. I don't know what it looks like, and it's going to look different for me than it is for my neighbor, but I'm going to work with that. I'm going to have that as a live question as I start this day. And because nothing exists independently of anything else, because nothing arises or comes into being of its own accord, because nothing is fixed, everything is workable. Everything matters. It's so interesting, isn't it? Like the truth is exactly the opposite of what we feel when we're overwhelmed. What could I possibly do? Nothing I do could make a difference. I'll just give up. No. Zoom out. Zoom out and take the cosmic view. Bringing good into the world in a small way is still bringing good into the world. Small and large is just our measuring mind. Don't let that dissuade you. Can you think of a moment recently where a simple kindness or warm gesture touched you, brightened your day? I hope so. I hope you have a bunch that you can choose from. That's real. That is real. Magnify it. Multiply it by all the beings who could make such a vow, who could live a day in such a way. I vow to do my part. Trungpa Rinpoche said, vow is refusing to give up on anyone or anything. And I remember some time ago, Gokhan gave a talk, and he said he was talking about a moment where he realized, it might have even been when he was, I think it was when he was like chanting the Bodhisattva vows, he realized like, oh wait, like I'm unstoppable. Like that's the power of a vow. Daito Roshi always used to say, 7 times knock down, 8 times get up. And then Myotai Sensei would point out, like, no, actually 7 times knock down, 7 times get up, but you get the message. 8 times get up. So I think about sometimes, you know, if we're unsure of how to live in the fire, then like, okay, we should clarify our vows. We should clarify our vows. And I've been thinking for myself with the election coming up quick, like, I should clarify my vows now. Nothing should change about our vows dependent on the outcome of the election. How we manifest them may shift. So there's actually a steady through line if you get yourself on your horse. I wanted to share with you, I think, a very powerful kind of version of creating a vow. And this is from Radical Dharma by Reverend Angel Kyoto Williams. And this is her warrior spirit prayer of awakening, which she wrote in response to September 11th. In the aftermath. May all beings be granted with the strength, determination, and wisdom to extinguish anger and reject violence as a way. May all suffering cease, and may I seek, find, and fully realize the love and compassion that already lives within me and allow them to inspire and permeate my every action. May I exercise the precious gift of choice and the power to change, which makes me uniquely human and is the only true path to liberation. May I swiftly reach complete, effortless freedom so that my fearless, unhindered action be of benefit to all. May I lead the life of a warrior. I find that very inspiring. The nourishment of presence. Jisho, do you need help with that? I think so. The nourishment of presence. This is so... so deeply part of our Zen path. I mean, in a sense, when we come to the Zendo and take our seat, this is what we're practicing. And of course, part of that practice is grappling with how disconnected, distracted, and unpresent we can be. It's okay. As long as our intention is there, that we understand and are clear about how to engage that, we're still getting the nourishment. But it's like we are learning how to wield that sword of Manjushri that cuts through conceptual dualistic mind, right? To just be here with this, to let go of everything that comes between. Just a little taste begins to heal. And, you know, as our ability to be in presence develops and deepens, we can see how it's not just the sort of stories and machinations of the thinking mind that we can drop, but that we can start to see how much we're creating this sense of a separate world. That perception and projection are so easily confused. And then this presence, it's healing because it's true, right? When I'm just like here with like water, and can just really like take that experience in, clean. That's contact with my original mind. And that's healing and nourishing. And this relates. Trungpa Rinpoche says, we experience glimpses of goodness all the time, but we often fail to acknowledge them. So, vowing to practice good, vowing to practice good, and then understanding that being in complete presence can be a manifestation, a fulfillment of that vow. Trungpa Rinpoche says, when we see a bright color, we are witnessing our own inherent goodness. When we hear a beautiful sound, we are hearing our own basic goodness. When we step out of the shower, we feel fresh and clean. And when we walk out of a stuffy room, we appreciate the sudden whiff of fresh air. These events may take a fraction of a second, but they are real experiences of goodness. They happen to us all the time, but usually we ignore them as mundane or purely coincidental. According to Buddhist principles, however, it is worthwhile to recognize and take advantage of these moments because they are revealing basic non-aggression and freshness. Yes. Yes. Sometimes, you know, people will say like, oh, Sashin, you're just sitting there. How is that doing anything? You should be out there in the streets. Each of us has to determine how we're going to fulfill those vows. Each of us has to determine what it means to us to bring goodness into the world. And that can change day to day. We're not locked in. That's why it's so good to have a clear vow. So you can see for yourself, is today a day that I take to the streets? Is today a day that I come join Sashin? Is today a day that I show up for my friend who's hurting? Is today a day that I rest because I am so tired? No right answer. We have to decide. Reverend Angel says in that the power to choose is our human power. I took out my bookmark. May I exercise the precious gift of choice and the power to change, which makes me uniquely human and is the only true path to liberation. So when the world seems overwhelming and the suffering seems deep, don't forget to sit. Sometimes when we're struggling, I know it's like the first thing to go because we just don't want to be present with our own discomfort. But you have to be. That's your vow. You have to be willing. That's the heartbreak. It's okay. It's really okay. There have been times, somehow this week in particular, I think maybe from having the True Refuge folks here and the Shack folks here, it's a very strong week of practice. Times just like coming into the Zendo when everyone's been sitting, and I could just feel what? It's presence. It's sincerity of practice. Sometimes it just like knocks the wind out of me. You know, I mean, we can become very accustomed to the form that the practice takes and everybody's sitting so still and there's nothing going on. And then sometimes it's like, whoa. You know, there's a story that just came to mind of years ago, we had a Maladoma Somme, who is a shaman from West Africa, came to lead a retreat. And he had, you know, through personal connections, had sort of this got on the program calendar. So it was a little bit out of the usual scope of Dharma activity, but it was pretty great. But he came and he was being shown around, and he came to the Zendo. I wasn't there, so this is what I heard, and stopped. It was an empty Zendo, and said, "What do you do in this room?" We did a teaching on patience, paramita, Gokananaya Mando, earlier this week. And I mentioned this in the Mando, and I'm just, it feels germane to this moment too, just how in preparing for that Mando, I started to feel like when I would sit down and take my seat in Zazen, I was like, wow, like that sense of being with what is, or in some translations, forbearance of just like not reacting, not doing. I was just like, wow, Zazen is such a like practice embodiment of like this particular paramita. So profound, so alive. You know, if you get really caught up and you're just in like a hive of thoughts, see if you can just like, it's okay. The thoughts are okay. Don't worry about them. But can you just let your body be in the room? Like, don't get in there and try to manage. That can sometimes make it worse. But just the simple, like, okay, let me just like Ram Dass said, be here now. Lighten up and just see if I can like, can I just like be in the room? That's it. You can try it right now. Yeah. The nourishment of contact with the cosmic mystery. So this really grounded practice, sitting, not doing, allowing, just being. And then all these bodhisattvas, all these Buddhas throughout space and time, again and again and again, we're like calling them in. Yeah, what's up with that? You know, I think it's interesting because I feel like very much like I, you know, my whole practice has been really here at Zen Mountain Monastery. And we were watching the other day with the residents, I was watching this old documentary on the founding of the monastery that was made, you know, by the monastery. It was an in-house production called Watching the Rock Grow, in which mostly it's Daito Roshi speaking about the beginnings of the monastery in recognition of the 10-year anniversary. And I was so struck, like, the two things that were kind of coming up for me is one, like, how, like, blasé and sort of mitigating the, like, woo-woo factor in some ways Daito Roshi was. You know, he would talk about liturgy in ways that were like, you know, this is like we're having a communal expression of faith in the Dharma. When you're bowing, just bow, no need to add anything extra there. And then all of the like ways in which, as he's describing his own experience of finding the monastery and creating the monastery, all of these like signs, sort of contact with the other realms, synchronicity, the way things happen, those moments where you're like, that's so weird. I was just, and now, whoa. And I think it's for each one of us to sort of feel our way into that sphere. But you know, this question of like, do prayers matter? Do Buddhists pray? Like, okay, on the surface, like, no. And then you look and it's like, yes! Yes, last week we did that Shantideva dedication, for those of you who were here or joined us online, and this is the last chapter of the Way of the Bodhisattva, in which like verse after verse is a prayer for the well-being of beings. And we're chanting it because Shugen Roshi has sort of fallen in love with it and is chanting it himself on, I think, my impression is like a daily basis. It is a total prayer. All of those, like, we dedicate the merits to, the Dharma guardians. Somebody asked in the Ongo intensive, like, kind of a question about, like, what about, like, the Dharma guardians and the Dharma protectors? And Shugen Roshi gave a response that I think is a really helpful response of like, well, who are the Dharma protectors and might one of them be you? And I was also thinking like, you know, the teaching of codependent origination, right? In order for us to contact the Dharma protectors, we have to be open to perceiving them. And then what happens? What happens when we bring forth that degree of faith? I guess you'll just have to find out for yourself. It's like that mind that prays. We can feel like all those beings and spirits, they're not real. And then we start to look more and more deeply at, like, what's real? How are we creating the world? Why is that part of the tradition as it's been handed down? And whatever we think about that, You know, if that's not, if we don't feel drawn in that direction, that's totally fine. But perhaps we can make space for like, okay, at the very least, all of this is pointing to like, it's a bigger world than what I know. And I guess in a sense, that's what I mean by like maintaining contact with the cosmic mystery. When the season of death comes, winter, and just before it, there is this outrageous explosion of beauty. That's the cosmic mystery. And if we get too in the weeds with like the science of what's going on, we're gonna miss it. We are on a planet that is spinning through outer space now. What? It's crazy. So that's what I mean. It's like we're down here in our human realm, blowing each other up. And that is so tragic. That is heartbreaking. And that heartbreak is also the wholeness. I was talking with one of the residents earlier, and they were saying that there's a word in some language that is the word of when you realize that every person has a life that's as complex and subtle and developed as yours is. That's the cosmic mystery. And then when we touch that truth and we think of all of the lives that have been senselessly lost in Palestine, in Lebanon, in Israel, that are being lost around the world, threatened here, that's me and you. That is heartbreaking. But in that heartbreak, there is love. And we can vow to live from love. And that is a response. That's the wholeness. Maitri in Sanskrit is loving kindness. And Thich Nhat Hanh points out that it was predicted by Shakyamuni Buddha that the next Buddha will bear the name Maitreya, the Buddha of love. Where is the Buddha of love? Where is the Buddha of love? Who is it? I'm going to end with a poem. This is a poem that I just encountered from one of the residents a couple of weeks ago, and it has so stayed with me. I hope I can make it through without breaking up too bad. I better take a moment. All right. This is from Rumi. One night a man was crying, Allah, Allah. His lips grew sweet with the praising, until a cynic said, So, I have heard you calling out, but have you ever gotten any response? The man had no answer to that. He quit praying and fell into a confused sleep. He dreamed he saw Kadir, the guide of souls, in a thick green foliage. "Why did you stop praising?" "Because I've never heard anything back." "This longing you express is the return message. The grief you cry out from draws you toward union. Your pure sadness that wants to help is the secret cup. Listen to the moan of a dog for its master. That whining is the connection. There are love dogs no one knows the name of. Give your life to be one of them."
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.